Welcome to Digital Health Transformers, a podcast series. In this podcast, we'll explore the dynamic world of healthcare innovation, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Bryce Barger, and today we have an awe-inspiring guest at the forefront of transforming the healthcare landscape. We are honored to have Amanda Wilson joining us today. Amanda is the co-founder and CEO of North Star Care. She leads innovation healthcare initiatives focused on scientific excellence and compassionate care delivery, which is all so important. Dr. Amanda Wilson, a leading figure in the addiction treatment, established Clean Slate Centers in 2009, pioneering office-based programs for opioid addiction. Drawing from her Clean Slate experience, Dr. Wilson then co-founded Bulver Care in 2017, which is a national telehealth solution for opioid use disorders. And in 2020, Dr. Wilson established North Star Care to solve the challenge of limited treatment options for alcohol use disorder patients. North Star offers personalized care through initiative technologies such as virtual reality, telehealth, wearables, monitoring devices, and
pharmacogenomics.
Virtual realities, telehealth, wearable monitoring devices, and pharmacogenomics treatments. Revolutionizing treatment outcomes, North Star Care is on a mission to revolutionize healthcare delivery through cutting-edge research initiatives and an unwavering commitment to patient well-being and satisfaction. In today's podcast, we have the incredible opportunity to gain insight from Amanda herself and learn more about her remarkable journey in driving healthcare innovation. Thank you for joining us today, Amanda. How are you today?
Thank you, Bryce. Really happy to be here, and I'm doing really well. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this conversation. I know when we spoke offline a couple of weeks ago, I shared my personal background with addiction, alcohol addiction, and my background in even opioid and kind of all of that. So I was so excited to have this conversation with you today, kind of just getting started with your kind of professional and personal story. Could you share kind of a moment in your career that inspired your interest in leveraging virtual healthcare for addiction recovery?
Sure. So going back to the mid-2000s, 2006, 7, 8, I was working as a hospitalist, as a physician, an internal medicine physician in a hospital setting. 2008 or so, we started seeing a huge uptick in the number of people that were getting admitted at our hospital that struggled with opioid dependence. And they were young, and they were getting admitted for weeks at a time because they needed IV antibiotics because of complications that can come from IV drug use. And we were really struck by that. So I began having conversations with one of my colleagues who had started working in the opioid addiction space. And she was telling me about how rewarding that work was. And I decided to join her at her clinic and met some of her patients and just was moved by the dramatic change that medication treatment could have in someone's life. So I decided to leave hospital medicine and create and found the very first office-based opioid treatment program led by physicians that was completely outpatient and enabled us to provide this care without people having to go into detox and rehab. And that company has treated 110,000 patients now. There are 80 some odd clinics across the country. So I was inspired to do telehealth, you know, to answer the last part of your question. I was inspired about telehealth because despite the fact that we opened so many clinics, and even in small states like Massachusetts, we needed 17 clinics. And that hit me that, you know, the challenge for patients getting to a clinic over and over again was real. We've learned since COVID that telehealth is a viable and completely reasonable and effective method for delivering mental health and substance use services for patients. And so it inspired us, in fact, to build Bulver, the first telehealth program. And now we're just translating all of that learning from opioid use disorder, clinical care in a clinic to telehealth with opioid use. And now translating that into how we can do alcohol use better in the same way.
That's incredible. It's such a different approach than what's out there too. You know, the options out there are very, behind the ball as far as technology wise. So this is such a breath of fresh air. What are some of the challenges? I know there's got to be some challenges in that you kind of encounter with integrating virtual healthcare into addiction treatment. What are some of those challenges, and kind of how have you guys overcome those?
A lot of people ask me, is it possible to treat a patient at home who has addiction? And that's because there's this widely held belief that the only solution to treat this disorder is to go away, right? To go away, to be in a facility where you can't get access to the substances, and then you'll come back and you'll be fine. I'm here to say that technology enables us to do this care in the home, and that while there are challenges, and I'll talk about those, overall, the benefit far outweighs the loss. The benefit of doing it in the home and over a long period of time is you're there with the patient while they're in their life, while they're living, working, dealing with stressors, having family things come up, having events come up even, like happy things that happen, just all variety of life events that are occurring in that person's life. They're distanced from that when they're in inpatient rehab. They are present in their life when we're meeting with them at home, right, in an ongoing way. And that day-to-day engagement with them and knowing what's going on and how they react to certain stressors, that gives us information to help us further and further enhance and improve the care we're doing. I mean, the challenges are often limited to technological barriers. For example, we had a patient in Niger, Africa contact us, really interested in getting care, and his internet access was completely limited. We're starting to look at ways to use alternative ways to get, through satellites and things to try to get Wi-Fi to patients who don't have it. So that's one barrier. But translating medical care into in-home treatment through telehealth, at least in the behavioral space, is really very doable. And as long as they can access the technology, we can bring this care to them.
Yeah, definitely. And I know this North Star and kind of the technology you guys have is so, I really want people to be able to see this. Could we go through, I know this is different than what we normally do, but I would love to kind of go through your slide deck if you have it, and then we can pick back up kind of on the conversation if that's okay. I would love to have people be able to visually see this.
100%. Thank you. I'd be happy to do that. Let me pull up a few of these slides. I'm happy to kind of walk through the program just at a high level. So, North Star was built really to address the gap in treatment today. There's 49 million people who struggle with alcohol or opioid use, but the most of them, 46 million, struggle with alcohol use. And only 8% of people are getting any treatment at all. And of them, less than 1%, only 0.4% are getting put on any medications.
Wow.
So we have a medical disorder that's a massive problem in the country. We have more people with this issue than cancer, diabetes, heart disease combined. And none of them are getting any medical care. None of them.
Wow.
They are basically getting purely counseling and group support. In no way do I want to disparage counseling and group support. They are tremendously helpful. But in isolation, without addressing this medical illness, we're not going to be able to do a good job. They don't do as well. In fact, there was a study that just came out that I'll share this very briefly that showed that people return to use after leaving rehab very quickly. In fact, within a week, almost a third of them, within a month, half of them, and by month six, 86% of them have returned to use. So this can actually confirmed what we had learned in the literature that, unfortunately, treatment without addressing medical issues sets people up to fail. So this is one of the most important slides that I will show. And it really kind of gives you a visual about why it is that not addressing the medical issues, not addressing brain health, creates a scenario where it's no win for the patient. This is what a normal healthy brain looks like. The yellow and red areas are the activity in the brain. But this is what the brain looks like of someone who's consistently been consuming alcohol and then abruptly stops. And what you can see that's interesting is there's very little activity anywhere, but most especially not in the frontal lobes. And the frontal lobes of our brain are where we make our decisions and think about our future and learn from our past. You know, learning without frontal lobe function is basically impossible. And yet we're sending patients with who have brains that look like this into an inpatient facility where they're not receiving any kind of brain support, and where they're being asked to learn life skills, and learning isn't something they can really do.
In that state.
Yeah, 100 days later, right, still not much better. So if we don't do something to expedite this brain health process, we're really not setting people up to succeed.
Yeah.
So to build this program, we took a really deep dive in the science. We actually read 2,600 papers. We read every publication in the medical literature on alcohol use disorder, both here in the US and abroad, because in other countries, they're doing things in a bit more advanced way than we do them here in the US. For sure. And so a couple of key things that we learned: medication treatment works. It's rare that patients are getting it. In the opioid space, they are now. In opioid space, patients get medication treatment, and that's pretty standard care now. But the alcohol space has not come this far yet. And unfortunately, very few people get placed on medication treatment. And it helps. There's a couple of different ways that it helps. First, we can stop cravings. Number two, we can actually help people not feel the withdrawal feelings that they typically go through. We can solve some of that symptomatology that they have coming off of alcohol. And number three, it's almost universal that people struggle with sleep. So by using certain medication combinations, we often can address a sleep deficiency that they have. The second thing that we learned is that there are enormous disruptions that happen to brain health because of nutritional depletion. And with alcohol in particular, you know, you're basically wiping out the healthy bacteria that live in our gut. And those healthy bacteria help us digest our food. So if we're not digesting properly, we then can't absorb certain nutrients that you need to create neurotransmitters, which are how our brain functions. Yeah. So you saw what the brain looks like without those nutrients, right? It's really shut down. So we need to restore that brain health. And what we do is there are over 20 different key nutrients that we send to patients. We get their laboratory data and we construct a personalized nutrient plan for each of them to help restore their brain health. Within 1 month, we see a 35% improvement in brain health on testing.
Wow.
Their cognition improves.
Wow.
We use genetic testing. We use genetic tests to help us know what medications are going to work best for patients, which nutrients are they likely to be deficient in, and how to replace those nutrients for them. Some people can't absorb B12 orally very well. So for them, we need to be injectable, and that's something we can learn from genetic testing. So it's really the state of the science, right? We're using all of the science that's out there today to try to help us pick these key different strategic interventions that can help.
Right.
Other interventions that also help are peer support, right? We know peer support can be helpful, but we want to make it available at home. And we'll talk about that briefly more in a moment. And then remote monitoring. You mentioned some of the technologies we're using. We're using remote monitoring with breathalyzers to track how patients are doing, not in a punitive way, but just to help us to know when they're having struggles so we can adjust the treatment. And similarly, virtual reality. That's how we're doing peer support. Again, completely novel way. So I'll touch on the fact that we do this with an interdisciplinary team. If you think of how heart disease or diabetes are managed, there's typically a supervising physician. There's a nurse practitioner that you might see with that doctor sometimes, a nurse that helps your, you know, manage your care that you call and arrange things with.
Right.
You'd have a navigator generally who helps you kind of, you know, sort out what providers do you need to see when. What you don't often have is the behavioral support, and that's why we added that. We added in the peer support, as well as having mental health professionals like counselors and licensed mental health counselors. In addition, our nurse practitioners are psych nurse practitioners.
Oh, wow.
So we bring a team that's medical and behavioral, because when you bring both together, you can actually be successful.
Yeah, and definitely.
The team all uses, in terms of technology, the team's using telehealth to have these visits, much like we're talking now. And they use VR to be able to participate in the groups that I mentioned earlier. The really cool thing about groups is people come in as an avatar, so they can be completely anonymous.
Yeah.
And we can have specific groups for people like veterans and things like that. So it's very cool. So I'm proud to say that, you know, from the 13% success rate, that is what is on average how well rehabs do in the country, unfortunately, we have almost an 86% success rate. It's a massive improvement over that. People's alcohol levels come down dramatically in just 4.5 weeks. We have an 86% drop in alcohol use just in that first month. So we know that we're having a huge impact on patient outcomes. And then lastly, I'll just show, this is what we ship to every patient. They start care in a day. They don't have to go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
They don't have to leave home. They don't have to leave work. They don't have to leave their children. They can do all of this care from home. So our year-long program, we work around their livelihood, their day-to-day lives. We work with them to find times that work for them to meet with them. We give them the first 90 days of nutrients, the breathalyzer, the VR headset, all of that's included. And we also bring the genetic kit to them and blood pressure and heart rate monitor so that we can taper them off of alcohol successfully.
Wow.
And we actually taper them using a really novel method. No one's done this before. We call it drink substitution therapy. It is a widely held belief that if people who struggle with alcohol use drink a non-alcoholic beverage, they will have a problem. And that turns out to not have any data to support that belief at all. That's not actually true. In fact, the opposite is true. When you use drink substitutes, you're giving them an alternative, something that's safe, something that's non-alcoholic, something that they can choose, and it works. So we taper people off of alcohol at home by going down one drink each day and going up on a non-alcoholic version of that drink every day until they're completely off and safe.
Wow.
So that's a lot of
that is so interesting. And touching just briefly on the alcohol, on the that's something I've never seen before. So kind of speak a little bit more about how that works. How does it, so they weigh, you go one less and then you substitute it with a drink that is it, I saw those, they almost look like they're in kind of alcohol bottles as well kind of help curb that craving, I'm sure. Are they similar in taste and they try to match all of everything except for the alcohol?
Yeah. So we find out what that person's favorite things are. You know, it could be that someone really loves IPA beers and whiskey, right?
Right.
What we do is we send them a non-alcoholic IPA beer and a non-alcoholic whiskey. There's a company that makes a beverage called Kentucky 74. It's made the same way that you actually make typical bourbon, only they just take and essentially heat it so that all the alcohol blows off. So it's a non-alcoholic version that tastes identical.
Wow.
So when patients are coming down, you know, our typical patient is drinking anywhere from 5 to 15 standard drinks every day. So when we taper them down, again, if they're drinking, you know, wine is their choice, we send them a non-alcoholic version of their favorite wine. And they, if they're drinking 5 glasses of wine, you know, 3 glasses of wine every night, we can go down by, you know, 5 and then go down to 4 drinks of wine and then have 1 non-alcoholic and 3 and then 2 and just climb up like that until they get to 5 non-alcoholic versions. Interestingly, it releases some dopamine. You know, there's a ritual, right? When people come home from work, sometimes there's a ritual. They come home, they make a gin and tonic. That's just what they've been doing for years.
Yeah.
And that ritual in and of itself releases a little bit of calming hormones like dopamine.
Yeah,
so
it's
we
interesting.
Know we're giving them that little bit still.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I had a, when I was working with Alliance in the addiction and mental health field, I had a very interesting conversation with a young man who was my exact age. And I had just called him on the phone. He had reached out to his mother and they had reached out. He was on his last leg. He'd been getting into a ton of trouble. And he was, funny enough, and he was addicted to weed, marijuana. And he kept telling me, and I talked on the phone, he's like, I know it's not possible to be addicted to weed. It can't be addicted to marijuana. I said, but I feel like it's so much more than that. He said, it's the process of getting it and of breaking it down and of rolling it up. It says it's everything. It's not just me. He said, once I smoke it, he says, it's almost gone. He says, it's almost everything beforehand that I crave. And I found that so interesting. So hearing that approach that you guys take is, wow, that's very, very, very cool.
Yeah. I mean, we treat all types of addiction. So we're not just treating alcohol. We have patients in our program who are addicted to alcohol and cannabis and benzodiazepines, and they smoke. right? So there are numerous things. You actually can be addicted to cannabis.
Yeah.
And to your point, there is this whole ritual. And
yeah.
And being able to give them that ritual, we had someone in our program who struggles with gambling. We had them, for instead of a drink substitution, we had them use non-financial games. There's gaming that you can do on your phone that doesn't risk you losing money, right?
Man, that's so cool.
We create a substitute for him to, you know, to sort of have an outlet for something, as opposed to just having to stop something cold turkey. That's really too hard.
Yeah, that is. It would, and that makes sense. And what's, I think, is very interesting about some of the, like when you go through your slideshow and some of the slides that you touched on, for example, 0.4% of people actually receive medication for alcohol addiction. And then the aspect of looking at the brain and how I thought that was the most eye-opening for somebody who does have somewhat of a background. And I am nowhere a professional or a clinical expert at all, but someone who has some type of knowledge, it makes so much sense that when they come off of alcohol, how their brain kind of shuts down for a little bit. It's kind of almost in recovery mode. It's almost like it's in sleep mode. And, but then we send them immediately to these inpatient rehabs for 27 days or however long Medicare and their insurance will take them. Right. And we expect them to like crash course, drink from a fire hose and just learn all this information, learn these coping skills, learn all these things too. And it's just like, they're asleep.
Yeah. And your brain is not able. They are not able. Yeah.
I had something I had no idea. I had just no idea. And is that kind of the same effect whenever you're coming off of an opioid as well?
Mm-hmm.
Is it kind of the same type of?
Yeah. In fact, that study came many years ago, actually. It was done by Nora Volkow, who's the director of the National Institute of Drug Abuse. And she had these PET scans done. And if you look at them, whether it's alcohol, cocaine, doesn't matter what the substance is, you see that shutdown response. So, you know, we have to be thinking about how we address brain health, and we have to do it in a much more holistic way. And we can't just ignore over here this medical care. I often use the example of cancer treatment. And, you know, if someone has a loved one that's suffering from cancer, they might have it recommended to them to participate in a breast cancer support group, for example, right? But people don't think that the support group is the core of the treatment.
Yeah.
You would never say to someone, oh, you have stage one breast cancer, I'm so sorry. Well, here's a support group. That's all you're going to need.
Good luck. Yeah.
And if it spreads, let us know, and then we'll put you in the hospital.
Okay. Right.
Right. And that's what we're doing today.
That's
we're putting
approach.
People in the hospital first, and we're waiting until their lives fall apart to do it. We don't, people don't go into treatment until they've had a DUI, they're facing losing their job, they have a major medical complication, their spouse is about to leave them. They wait till stage four because leaving your life for 30 days is a hard thing to do.
Sure. And you know what? That kind of leads me into a natural kind of segue into kind of the teletherapy and the addiction treatment kind of it. In your experience, what role does the teletherapy play in addressing kind of those barriers, such as stigmas and geographical limitations? I know we touched on being able to send them kind of all over, but what about the stigma?
Yeah, well, you know, at least in this moment in the country, in general, people who struggle with addiction are blamed. People don't think about them having, you know, an addictive disorder that's genetic, even though the genetic contribution to developing an alcohol problem, for example, is the same as the risk of your genetics risking you developing heart disease or hypertension.
Right.
Roughly 40 to 60% of the risk is genetic for all of those things, alcohol and hypertension and heart disease. So people don't know that. So they assume that it's someone who's making bad life choices who genuinely doesn't care about those choices or the results of those actions. And that's just not at all true. This is a genetic disease that's treatable. So because it's widely believed that this is their fault and that the patients who aren't succeeding just aren't trying hard enough, there's a lot of judgment. So people are apprehensive, right? They don't want anyone to know. I mean, I appreciate that people can go to a community support group, but it's not technically anonymous. Right.
True. Yeah,
so when you go away into treatment, that's not anonymous either. So there's a huge risk in that. So I see telehealth as being a solution in addiction treatment in particular, because you're removing the risk. You're removing the risk that other people will know. They don't need to leave their home. No one needs to know they're in treatment. They continue with their lives. They still show up at family events. They're still able to go to work every day. So they can engage in treatment that is actually anonymous. They can engage in peer support in VR that's actually anonymous. Still have the chance to meet other patients, but they never know who they are. So technology enables people to feel safe.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
We really have seen that be transformative, both in enabling people to feel safe to go into treatment in the first place. But then what we've really been blown away by is that being able to be honest in VR, not be worried, embarrassed, afraid, creates a safe space that's so freeing that
yeah.
patients actually, I think, share more than they ordinarily would and feel safe to do it.
Yeah.
So,
and another thing that I think is cool, speaking more to that, to the VR headset and the accessibility of it, is I know there are resources on the headset. So like, say if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're going through something triggers you, or you start having a major craving, I imagine you might not be able to jump into a peer support group 24/7. That makes sense. But as far as some of the resources that are available, I don't know if anybody listening has used a VR headset, but you truly kind of like travel into this like little, like, well, your own world, if you will. And I think it's so cool that if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, if it's 4 o'clock in the morning, or 6 a.m. or 9 a.m. whatever time, that if you just need some resources, you can pop that on. You're kind of transported to your own world where you can kind of deal with what's going on and kind of calm yourself down or battle those demons, whatever you need to kind of get yourself back on track. And you can take that off and you're back. You're back. And like you're saying, you're back in your home. You don't have to travel anywhere else. You're home. You pick back up with your life and you keep moving. That was another eye opening when we talked offline. I thought was so interesting and so cool. That I loved a lot. Can you kind of, going into the mobile health applications for recovery support, can you provide kind of an example of kind of a digital tool that has shown promise in supporting addiction recovery? Kind of how does that compete with some of the traditional methods?
So there are all variety of different methods that people are out there offering, right, to support patients who struggle with addiction. Traditional treatment basically is in person, right? You go into a detox, or you go into an AA meeting, or you walk into rehab. So technology opens up the option to not have to be in person for that kind of human contact to help you do well. So that's one category, is, you know, virtual treatment, which isn't technically an app, but it's leveraging technology to bring those services to patients, and VR, like we just talked about. There are apps, though, that help patients. There are apps that that are, for example, drink counters, so that people can try to decrease their use on their own. And, you know, if that worked, then we wouldn't have an alcohol problem in the country. So by itself, I would say it's not enough.
Yeah.
But certainly in tandem with support like we offer at North Star, for example, that can really be helpful. Another organization, though, that I think is doing something really wonderful, and something that I'm hopeful will scale and become more and more available, it's a company called Dynamicare. And they have an app that enables patients to essentially engage and be able to get rewards for their success.
Wow.
So yeah, it's wonderful. So if someone achieves a specific goal, they can enter it into the application. They're literally giving rewards for success. And it can be something as, you know, simple as a $25 gift card, or it can be, it's just, you know, anything that helps tag success in a moment in time, gives someone, you know, really positive reinforcement and motivates them to continue, is huge. So they've had huge success actually in helping patients with addiction. And we have to figure out with payers and insurers how to implement systems of care like that, because overall, everyone wins. You know, if it helps motivate patients and they do better in care, their lives are restored and the insurer benefits because the patient's doing well and they don't have as many medical complications like from alcohol use causing liver failure or other issues. We avoid that. So there are some really neat options out there. I would just name that no one point solution is going to solve it. You know, one of the things that we've built is a multi-point solution. There's easily 20 different kinds of interventions. And, you know, one patient might benefit from these five things and another patient benefits from a completely separate five things, which is why care has to be personalized.
And that's why I think North Star does such a great job of is personalizing that care because, you know, of the way the steps you guys have and the different options you guys have and kind of you can play, it's kind of, you can plug and play. I'm sure if you didn't need the drinks, you don't have, there's just ways that it's purely customizable. You have full autonomy. You have access to it 24/7. I know it's just in every sense of the way, seems better than an in-person and kind of that traditional approach of where, you know, you're coming out of inpatient help, you just in there for 27 days where you're in a very structured program and then they dump you out, you case management, you know, has your case and they say, okay, you did really well. Congratulations. You're better. Go back home. And you go back into those same stressors. And a lot of the times, they're not set up with, or they're given a referral to an outpatient program, but whether they follow up on that or whether the outpatient reaches out, why not just give them something that they take home with them? You have this with you, or, you know, give them the information where they can sign up and it's sent right to your door. You don't have to do anything else. Take all the stressors away from it and start your care, you know, right there in your own home. And that is such a...
the same team through that whole year too. I mean, I understand why if you leave an inpatient program and then you're asked to go to an outpatient program, generally you're meeting a whole new team of people.
It's true. Continuity and care.
That's really hard, right? It's scary. Yeah. And then something where people feel vulnerable, understandably, because of stigma. So they're nervous about what that's going to be like. Whereas with us, they sign up, they're with the same core team of professionals that are with them through that whole year. And
whole
that
journey,
makes
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of just answered my last question I had for you, unfortunately, or kind of some of the benefits you see for the VR. Are there any other benefits that the VR goggles kind of had that we haven't touched on that you'd like to give could briefly touch on?
I do. So, you know, when you think about the model with AA, for example, and people have a sponsor, right? When they meet, sometimes they'll go out for coffee or they go to a park or they go do something, right? Sure. And so our vision with VR was not only that patients could meet in groups, but it was that every patient doesn't just have the access to those groups. They actually have their own peer guides that are their one-on-one peer guides. Mm-hmm. They talk to them every day in the beginning. They meet with them on Zoom periodically. There's a real relationship that's built over time.
Sure.
And we have many patients who, like you, really appreciate the cool feature of being able to go into your own space, right, and explore something. So we've had patients meet in VR with one of our peer guides and go do a group gaming event.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, or you can literally walk. Google has all of these three-dimensional places that you can, you know, go for a walk and literally have an experience where you're walking through a city that you want to explore.
Wow.
You can walk on a beach. There are meditation classes. There are yoga classes. There's all variety of things where people can meet up and actually go do an activity and share that experience together. And while they're doing it, you know, they can be playing a shooter video game together, but they can be talking about what's happening in their lives.
Yeah,
and that
building
creates
that rapport.
A natural rapport and connection that just feels like it creates a safe space to just feel comfortable to talk.
Yeah. And if they just kind of a shameless plug here to end this because who can, if you're dealing with addiction right now and you're watching this, how can they reach out to North Star? How can they get this treatment in their hands?
Well, thank you for that. So the easiest way is just to go to our website, which is, you know, northstarcare.com. There you'll see the phone number that you can click on and it will connect you and dial right away. You can certainly, you know, explore more information about our program there. but going to northstarcare.com is probably your safest bet. I'm also happy to just give the phone number, which is 855-302-9191. So please feel free to call directly too. We have people on who will be able to answer your questions right away, whether you're the person struggling or it's someone that you love and care about. We talk to families all the time.
Yeah. And definitely this can be, it's going to be utilized with insurance as well. So if that's, you know, please call Amanda, call her team, just speak with a representative and just kind of learn more. If you have any questions, you know, they can definitely answer those questions for you. And you know, it's okay to ask for help. I just want to say that, you know, as somebody who's dealt with this and my own family, it's okay to ask for help. You know, it's, I think that's such a weird stigma people have nowadays, and whether it's ego or whether it's embarrassment, but it's just okay. It's okay to just ask for help and to have somebody give you a helping hand. So Amanda, thank you so much for sharing that valuable insight with us. I've been super excited to have this conversation. And as now the listeners, I mean, you guys see why this is a company that's, you know, we always talk about in digital health transformers, pushing the envelope and pushing boundaries forward. And it's truly what you guys are doing. And I want to shake your hand and pat you on the back, because, you know, this is what it takes for us as a country and us as a world to make this place better, which we all want. We all want to make this place better, but it takes innovation. It takes out of the box thinking like this. And to see you guys do that at North Star is so impressive. And I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, truly, Bryce. Such a pleasure. Really appreciate you. Thanks. All right.